priorities of the context. So that enhances our priorities. So that is what we are trying to do there. And of course, we work closely with China on the G20 and the WTO in order to preserve the developmental aspects of the Doha Development Round. As members would know, it's stalling because of the challenges that we're experiencing in the Doha Round, but there's a close cooperation with China on that. I think we've seen the statistics on the trade, so I won't go into detail on that. Safe to say that the challenge that we have is that we are, I wouldn't say a dispute, but China is of the view that the trade balance is not, there's no trade imbalance in favor of China with South Africa. And it relates to our export of gold, because we export gold to China through third country, through Hong Kong mainly, through third market. So they see that as an export to China, while they see it as an export to Hong Kong. So it creates an issue with regards to the trade statistics. But we have, and I will go into detail through the various platforms that we're engaging China on how we are trying to resolve that issue regarding the statistics. But there is a challenge that we're experiencing there with the statistics. At the end of 2009, China became our number one export partner, and it's followed by the US, Japan, and Germany. Also, in the same period, China has become the number one import partner in Asia, surpassing Japan and India. So this shows that in a short period of time, which since the start of our relations with China, it shows that there has been a real increase in the level of trade between the two countries. And as I've said, to try and resolve the issue with the statistics, we have agreed to establish a joint working group on statistics. And it's going to focus on examining the causes of the imbalances in the trade structure, because as the ambassador indicated, we are exporting more low-value-added products to China, that is mainly raw materials, while we import high-value-added products from China. And for us, we've been raising through the forums that we have with China that this is an uncomfortable situation for us, because it's not sustainable in the long run. And we want China to invest, as the ambassador said in his last slide, to see more involvement in the beneficiation, especially beneficiation at source that will contribute to our industrial development priorities, and also contributing to creating jobs in South Africa. So that is an engagement that we are currently having with China. The top 10 traded products, as you can see, it's still really raw materials. We have iron ore, we have ferroalloys, chromium ores, manganese, platinum, while if you look at the imports that we have from China, you'd see that it's high value added product, machinery, electronic products. So that's where really we are concerned, as you can be seen in that picture, that the structure of trade is still, it leaves much to be desired. Also, in terms of the investment, I won't also dwell much on this because the ambassador has touched it. But I think what we are saying is that we, in terms of the value of investment, we are investing also a lot in China, and they are now starting to invest, the biggest investment being the Standard Bank deal that was done. But also from South African side, there are investment that go into China, the SAP Millers, the Kumba Resources, the Anglo-Americans that are present in China. In terms of the bilateral mechanisms for trade and investment cooperation, it comes as a result of the BNC that the ambassador has referred to, And there has been a joint economic and trade committee that has been established, led by the Minister of Trade and Industry, and it's a sectoral committee of the BMC. And the focus areas of the JETC includes the following. We have four areas that we are trying to focus on in the cooperation with China. It's about advancing the Partnership for Growth and Development, which is the PGD. It's also about encouraging enterprises from both sides to explore mutually beneficial commercial opportunities. And it's also about identifying projects that we can jointly implement, and mostly they will be funded through the China-Africa Development Fund that the ambassador had already referred to. And we also look into coordination in support of NEPAD projects and FOCAC, and also ensuring that those relations are really about supporting trade, because we believe that sustainable development in the continent will come through opportunities through trade. And there are already inroads that have been made with regards to this. China is offering market access to different quota-free market access to LDCs from Africa, and they are taking advantage of that, although they are still limitations because LDCs have limited productive capacity, so they are not able to take full advantage of the opportunities that exist as a result of that market access. And in the last FOCAC, there have been engagement with China to see whether they cannot extend the market access beyond the LDC, so that it's open to all African countries, including South Africa, on a number of product lines that can be negotiated between the two sides. But that's still an engagement process that will need to be undertaken. There are no firm commitments from China on this. But at least for now, we have market access for LDCs, less developed countries. In terms of the main areas of interest, the PGD comes up prominently from the DTI point of view. And the PGD emanated from President's discussions in 2007, which was the third bi-national commission. And really, it came about as a result of the concern that was raised from the South African side to say we are not happy with the current structure of trade between South Africa and China, and we need to look into how we enhance the trade relations so that we respond to the challenge that we face from our side. And of course, the Chinese agreed, and the PGD then was agreed to. Also, in 2007, Cabinet took a decision that we need to strengthen economic diplomacy with emerging markets. And then there was an agreement that we must use China as a test case, and we pilot and see how we can, all the, especially the department, lead departments in the ICTF, can all cooperate through economic diplomacy, and see what results we can get in enhancing relations. So we are in the process of implementing the PGD. And also Cabinet agrees that to advance this process, there are three main areas we'll focus on. It will be the PGD, it will be the Shanghai World Expo, and the 10th anniversary of diplomatic relations. All of these are in place because we celebrated the 10th anniversary of diplomatic relations. We're currently busy with the Shanghai World Expo, as the ambassador indicated. And there have been a bit of challenges with the PGD itself because of the fact that we have not agreed on how we implement the main elements of the PGD. The main objective of the Partnership for Growth and Development was really about ensuring the sustainability of economic relations and also ensure that we construct a relationship that balances trade and investment flows between the two countries. And I think the issue of the trade flows, I indicated earlier, the issue of the trade statistics and the fact that there is a forum that is created and is in place to engage with the statistics. But what we are seeing from our side is a growing trade deficit, which is currently standing at around 22 billion, as you saw in the earlier presentation. Also, we've seen and China has acknowledged this, an increase in the number of imports, import products from China to South Africa. And that was why we had the MOU on the clothing and textile, on textile and apparel, where we had quota restrictions which were in place. Although it has expired now, it was about ensuring that there is an opportunity for our industry to grow and be competitive. But other than that, there are also elements about capacity building that we agreed to on that MOU, which are currently in place, about China supporting our industry to grow and be competitive. So that element of the MOU is still in place, although the quota restriction has expired. The PGD was really anchored around three main pillars, which was market access, mineral beneficiation, and infrastructure development and facilitation. We had engaged China on market access, which was about them agreeing to a number of products that can have duty-free, quota-free market access to China. In that engagement, they have raised concerns in that they are also still a developing country, and it might set some precedent if they open or give South Africa preferential market access. But we're still engaging in that because, in our view, there are within the WTO rules possibilities we can explore for China to grant South Africa that preferential market access. But as I said, it's a process that we're continuously engaging on. There are no firm commitments that we have on that. And the mineral beneficiation and infrastructure development will come through the support that we'll get through concessional loans or the CAD fund, which is the China Africa Development Fund. As we said, indicated, there are positives that exist from the PGD, but in terms of especially the market access element, we have not really been able to get firm commitment from China with regard to that, which then limits the benefits that we were hoping to get out of that partnership agreement. And as a result of the challenges that we experienced out of the PGD, there was a visit that was undertaken by the Minister of DECO in February this year. And through the engagement that we had with the Chinese, it was felt that we need to elevate the partnership agreement, the PGD, to a wider comprehensive agreement. And the aim of this is to ensure that we provide more substance to the issues that were entailed in the PGD. So the comprehensive agreement will still entail the elements that are entailed in the PGD, but will expand on the substance and how jointly we can achieve the objectives of the PGD. So the core elements will still remain in the comprehensive agreement. And we are hoping that this comprehensive strategic partnership agreement will be signed during the upcoming state visit. So there is currently a process that is in place to ensure that various departments submit inputs to international relations and cooperation so that we are able to come up with that and coordinate inputs into the comprehensive strategic partnership agreement. So DECO is providing a lead on that, but from the DECO point of view, we are making inputs on the trade elements that will be part of that comprehensive agreement. Thank you, Chair. That is the end of our presentation, but I think really, what becomes important in this engagement is to ensure that we are able to lock in value addition and beneficiation through the comprehensive agreement that I've just referred to, but also ensure that as we engage, whether it's China or any other cooperating partners that we engage in, that they contribute, one, to our developmental priorities, which are currently for the DCI entailed in the Industrial Development Plan, Action Plan, but also contribute to the broader objectives of continental development. So that will be the key focus as we engage China. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much. Now, honorable members, I'm sure we'll engage and even on your specific interests. I think I must say why we invited the two departments is because our trip to China, so that when we come back, we go there well informed, and when we come back, we are more informed, and we can, you know, persuade and make other things to happen for our own provinces. Honorable Liz, Honorable Mgoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much to the two departments for their comprehensive briefings. It certainly makes it easier to approach a trip like this with the knowledge. Now, the interesting thing I find is that the ambassador could actually be sitting over there with the DTO, because he covered economic issues, which clearly are international issues, and I have no problem with that. But what concerns me a little bit is the lack of any briefing about other issues, international issues. You briefly mentioned Tibet. We know that China has huge human rights abuses throughout the country, not just in Tibet. There's no religious freedom. Labor relations are shocking. Consequently, we battle to compete with them because of the low wage rates, the way they treat their labor. So I would be interested to have a bit of a briefing on those aspects as well, if we could. Then, in terms of economic development, I'm a little bit unsure of what you mean by economic. Sorry, I've switched to the other department, Ambassador. Yeah. What do you mean by economic diplomacy? Is this kind of a cross-cutting thing with international relations? And is it? Are we looking at sanctions? I mean, one of the major reasons that South Africa is where it is today was economic sanctions, and we had human rights abuses of extreme proportions, and economic sanctions were then applied to us, quite rightly so. And yet here in China, we'll hear from the ambassador, but we appear not to be too concerned about the human rights abuses. So I'm just interested whether that's got anything to do with it. The wider comprehensive agreement that you're suggesting will be signed at the state visit in August, I think. When will that come through the committee, and when will we approve it and Parliament approve it? Presumably we have to approve it before get signed, or is that not the way it works? Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just got 2 points. The first one is on the issue of if the committee goes there, what sort of safety tips should we look at in terms of intelligence? I think there are a lot of beautiful South African women as well, so I'm not going there for women. But in terms of intelligence, Chairperson, what spots to avoid, what issues to avoid, knowing that China is one of the countries that have got the strong intelligence, and what issues to look out for. Secondly, Chairperson, is on the issue that you said that China is engaging with Africa, with the continent. They are also, they play a role in economic development of the country, of the continent, Africa as a whole. My question is, we allowed other multinational companies in the previous sea to come and invest in South Africa in terms of minerals and other issues, partly in finance. At the end of the day, Anglo-American, they divested from South Africa, they reinvested in London after they've exploited our mineral resources. China is the main, we are exporting most of our mineral resources there. As you said, they are iron ore, manganese, and gold as well. Aren't we falling into the same trap that will allow these multinational companies coming to South Africa with no beneficiation, with no skills development, after resources are exploited, and then they also delist their move out of the country, so to speak, in the way the best bond, looting Africa.
Any other question? Honourable Sinclair, Honourable Chan.
Mr. Chairperson and Your Excellency and the officials, I think the big issue that we need to address is the the deficit of the $22 billion. Now, a relationship is a very interesting but also a demanding exercise. You know, I think the best is a relationship of marriage, you know. As soon as the one party gets more benefits than the other, then certainly the relationship is not so sound anymore. And then questions are being asked about that. Now, it's good and well to say, in the interest of many things and so on, we must continue. But I suppose at some stage we must get to a point where we take a strategic decision about for how long are we going to allow this deficit to increase. Because it seems my understanding is that the deficit is not getting smaller, it's increasing. And it links to the issue about, I think some of the people will raise and raised in the past, is the issue about, if we can use that very strong word, the Chinese imperialism, not just for South Africa, but also for Africa. And at some stage, we must literally put our foot down and say, but okay, this is enough, we can't continue like this. When are you going to start with your value adding here? And I think the official from the DTI referred to that, some initiatives in Limpopo and so on and so forth. But from our perspective, specifically a rural province like the Northern Cape, where the majority of the iron ore that's reflected there is the number one export, South Africa must take a strategic decision to say no. No longer are you going to take the raw material out of the country without beneficiating it. But more than that, we need governments, including the Chinese government, also to invest in our infrastructure. It's not enough just to come and take our products, but they must also invest in infrastructure in terms of the railway and so on and so forth. The second issue is the one that the Excellency referred to, the issue about South Africa's role in Africa. And I didn't understand it exactly clear. Maybe he must just contextualize his argument again. Is the ambassador saying that SADC per se at the moment is not working as it's supposed to work? And if that's the case, then it takes the argument to a different level to say, what is the South African government doing to make SADC work and to create that customs union, all those things that we know about? The third issue, Chair, is the issue about the Chinese businesses in our country. I honestly, and I'm not saying it just because the Honourable Member Cheng is here, but I honestly don't have anything against any Chinese or any person. But if I go to my constituency, one of the big complaints that I get is foreigners, including Chinese people, that come in there, do business, but don't actually contribute further to the economy of South Africa. I'm referring to in terms of paying tax, employing people, and so on and so forth. So I know we live in a globalized world with soft borders and so on. But maybe I must, if you allow me, Chair, I must share this. I once had the privilege to attend with the chairperson of the Council, Mushlangu, the Communist Party's conference in Beijing. And the current president, Jim Tao, at that meeting said that China is not going to conquer the world by the military. They're going to conquer the world economically. And I'll never forget that, because what I see in the rural areas, in the ruralness of rural areas, is exactly that. And there's a deliberate strategy of the Chinese government to put people in these backward places. And with due respect, they contribute very little to the economy except in terms of whatever they do. What is our very difficult strategy on this? Because it's not the easy matter. Thank you, Chair.
Any other question in the, oh, on the chat?
Thank you so much, Chair. Just follow up with Oliver Sinclair's comments. Some of them I agree, some of them I disagree. I believe that, obviously, Ambassador Ri is sitting in the hot seat. You know, as now people try, they're all over the world, they're all trying to shake their hand with China, and we have to look after our interests, you know, with our country here. So it's not an easy job, an easy mission, that which we can understand on that day. But the question which I want to find out from the DGI is, although you explained this deficit of the trade balance, imbalance, and then because of it, due to the gold and diamond which we export through the third country and so on like that, have you got any idea, you know, what figure of that one day? If you add up that figure, what is our deficit? Is it bring the figures more closer or not? The second question we'd like to ask is, we understand that at the moment we all export the raw material and over to China. So what is the challenge, you know, which the DGI have to bring, to encourage the China manufacturer to come into our country and to set up the manufacturer here, and instead of we only export the raw material, we can, you know, export the value-add product to China. Thank you.
There's a follow-up on all this.
Mr. Chairman, if I'm sorry if I may, because Honourable Chen makes a very good point, and I just want to try and emphasise that, is that what exactly is it that prevents industry from coming to South Africa from China? Why are we talking about, as the Honourable St. Clair says, sorry, we draw the line, you can't have our material. It's kind of like a blackmail thing, you know. It's the stick rather than the carrot to get industry here, and I think that's a really critical issue. But Mr. Chairman, the thing that I failed to say earlier, and I apologise for having to come back to you, but I would like some guidance from both departments of what they expect us as a delegation to say and do on this trip. There must be some expectations. We're not going there just as a holiday, and it must be a constructive trip. So I'd really love their input as to what their expectations of us as parliamentarians would be on this trip. Thanks.
Yeah, even before the department tells you, one of them is to get all these companies that are taking goods and having these factories in KwaZulu-Natal. You must achieve that. some other questions that I have. On the presentation, it was said that in 2007, the cabinet made this decision on the three programs. But then the ambassador said we entered the Shanghai late. How do you reconcile the two? 2007, the decision is made, and then we entered the Shanghai late. Secondly, when are we likely to join the BRIC? You know, we might have shown an interest, and if we've got a timetable, when are we likely to join it? Thirdly, we have got relations, there are relations between China and Taiwan. And in the presentation it was said it's a matter of when. But there are also relations between South Africa and Taiwan, which are not the same. How would we reconcile the two once more? When the issue of China and Taiwan has been resolved, we'll still have the issue of South Africa and Taiwan, which would be outstanding. On the issue of the $22 billion deficit, what would be ideal for South Africa, you know, to export? You just name, you know, we're exporting what is really not making money. If we could know as South Africans, what do we really need to export to make money? Just name bananas, apples, you name them, all of them. Then we'll close that gap of deficit. Linked to that question, if we want to close that deficit, would it assist the government's five priorities? Do we concentrate on that? Lastly, the approval of Chinese goods in South Africa, we've got SADS and all that. How do we tackle such issues as both departments so that people, you know, I had an experience. I saw some senior official from AXA was building a house somewhere in Johannesburg, you know, saying I was wanting tiles, and they're costing about 900 and something a square meter. But then he went to China and saw the very same tiles. They're about 145 square meter, delivered where he was staying. So how then do we check? How do we really find the balance? Are we overpricing ourselves in South Africa on certain goods that other people would even prefer to go outside? Oh, sorry. Sorry, my apologies. I never found it.
Mr. Chi, the department, can you see, just show us that scarf. You all know about the scandal. It was made in China. A lot of these questions have been asked already, but you know that a trade deficit is an unhealthy thing. And at the moment, my colleague down there already said China's looting the continent. This is how colonialism started way back. First of all with people, and then with the riches of Africa. So we must be sure that we don't fall into the same trap. And thereby, I agree with my other colleagues that said, but we must now say, whoa, we must now add value to our product. Because we continue, for all these years, we're continuing the process. We're not... If you do the same thing every day, you will get the same result. So we've got to think out the box and do what has to be done to change it around. And why are we exporting through Hong Kong? Is there a agreement that China has or one that we haven't got? Why not direct? And from when onwards, can it be direct? What are our target dates and our capacities and so on? And then the value-added chain to that is my big concern. Then this trade agreement that we're going to have, the comprehensive agreement, how is that going to change that $22 billion by keeping in view that we're not going to go the colonial way, that we are going to think differently and make a different effort to change what is happening or beginning to happen again. Thank you.
I'm sure this time around I'll start with the DTI.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first question that relates to economic diplomacy, and I'm sure Ambassador will add here, we are now trying to enhance relations so that you don't only have political diplomacy, but your political diplomacy is also supported by ensuring that you enhance or strengthen economic relations with the country. So that's what we mean by economic diplomacy. So it means a coordinated effort by DTI, Foreign Affairs, DECO, and the key departments that we need to come into. So you ensure that whatever agreements that you engage with countries, they have a strong emphasis on the economic element. And it's just to take into account the impact of globalization and the fact that the economics is also becoming an important part of diplomatic relations. So that's what it means. So it's a coordinated effort, which is why Cabinet decided in 2007 that we must pilot this through China, which is why it's not surprising that the presentation by the ambassador was also touching on the economic issues, because we are now a coordinated front trying to move as Team South Africa in engaging with China and see what the benefits are that will accrue out of that process and whether we cannot use that now as a basis of engaging with any other party or partners for that matter. So that is really the issue there. And the issue that was raised about China looting Africa's resources, I think that's why we have the Forum for China and Africa Cooperation, to ensure that we engage China in a way that doesn't only benefit them, but also as they engage with the continent, they take into account the economic priorities of Africa or the developmental priorities of Africa, which is why, because initially when FOCAC started, China was not taking into account NEPAD. But through the various engagements and through the FOCAC, the various forums that we've had, now they are coming up with priorities and support for Africa. They are looking into how that adds value or contributes to NEPAD objectives. But of course, I think the difficulty that we also have in all of this is that you are dealing in the AU with sovereign member states. So it's difficult while you're trying to coordinate yourself as the continent and you say these are our priorities. It also depends on what the sovereign member state, whether they will enforce what you are putting in those multilateral frameworks. So that is the challenge that we have. But if honorable members look at the various declarations of FOCAC, you'll see that the move now is around beneficiation, is around transfer of technology, transfer of skills, so that you are able to ensure that whether it's China or any other country, you are able to ensure that the continent does not end up in the same situation that it was, because the opportunities are there, we have the resources, we have 1 billion people, which is a big market. How do we take advantage of the relations and the partnerships that we have to contribute to the broader socio-economic development priorities of the continent? So I think the approach is there, but it's how practically these things get implemented. I think that's where the challenge becomes. On the issue of the deficit and how do we plan to reduce the deficit. I think that's why we are now looking into this comprehensive strategic partnership agreement with China, because we are saying let's look at, while the elements of the PGD are still crucial and will definitely be the core elements of the comprehensive strategic partnership agreement, what is important is to, because I think what lacks in the PGD is the substantive part of it. The elements are there, but substantively, how do you implement it? So that will now be brought into the broader comprehensive agreement. And it should assist us in dealing with the deficit, because you are now looking into enforcing, in a way, the value addition. And how we do that, it will be based on how we engage with China, and because it has to be a negotiated process, and see how we lock those things into the comprehensive agreement. On the issue of SADC, I think the ambassador will clarify, but I want to just clarify from a trade perspective. I think there are challenges that we have, and I'm sure honorable members will be aware because these things have also been in the media, challenges both in SACU and challenges in SADC. There is currently a, in terms of the roadmap for SADC, we should be establishing a customs union in 2010. And we are, of course, not anywhere close to achieving that. And South Africa's view has been that while a customs union is important, we launched in 2008 a free trade area in SADC, and there are elements of it that are currently being implemented. But there are also broader issues, rather than the tariffs, issues of trade facilitation, dealing with supply side constraints, looking into addressing the non-tariff barriers that traders experience as they trade within the region. So those are the issues that we feel are critical and should be addressed as a matter of priority before you can even say you establish a customs union. Because if you don't address those, and you establish a customs union, it will relatively be meaningless because you still have the serious bottlenecks that you have not addressed. And South Africa has been saying that let's look into developing and having a concerted effort that will look into addressing these issues before you look into a customs union, because it will only be a customs union by name but not operating as a customs union. So those are the challenges that exist in SADC. But the ambassador will clarify himself as to how it relates to the China debate. I think I'll ask my colleague to come in on why we are trading with China third markets like Hong Kong. But I would like to, as I've indicated earlier, if we are able to address the issue of value addition and beneficiation at source, and in our engagement with China, they didn't disagree with this, which is why you have pilot projects that are currently in place in Limpopo. But the issue is that we need now to move more and encourage Chinese companies to move more towards that, the beneficiation and the value addition, so that they're able to. And if I also respond to the question that was asked by the Honorable Chair, is that if you do that, the beneficiation at source, you are able to create job opportunities. So it will assist with the government priorities. You also possibly would also have access to technology that the Chinese have that South Africa would not have. But it, all of those things will need to be locked into the contracts that we sign, so that they don't just, because they won't automatically happen, there have to be some enforcement mechanisms that exist to ensure that you are able to promote skills transfer, technological transfer, but also create job opportunities for South Africans. Because the disadvantage is that if you then export it raw as is from the ground and then it's gone, then really there's no value addition, there's no real opportunities that you create. But also, just to respond to one of the questions as to why people then look into buying things elsewhere, including China, I think, and also the issues of standards that the chair has raised, I think that this is because there are standards that, as you've indicated, Honorable Chair, that SABS issues out. Then it becomes the responsibility of the enforcement agencies to ensure that products that come in adhere to those standards. So SARS will be important and all of those agencies. But in terms of, we still have an issue with the competitiveness of our industries. And that's why sometimes they are unable to stand the pressure that comes from outside markets. And the case in point would be the clothing and textile, which is why we had to enter into that MOU with China. But I think also with the EPAP that has been launched, it's about also looking into the productive efficiencies that we have, so that we are able to ensure that we are able to
produce products that can, that are competitive, but also we produce efficiently. So those are the issues that are currently being looked into. Yeah, I think I've responded.
Can you please first give it to your colleague about that?
Thank you very much. I think also in terms of, I think I'd like to expand a little bit in terms of the disagreement that we have with China with regard to the trade imbalance and trade statistics. That apart from gold, there are other factors that are causing the trade to be balanced. For example, we are using the FOB and the China is using the CIF. And also there's a time lag and currency fluctuation, you know, in terms of and also the implication of trade via Hong Kong. One, the reason why gold is sold through Hong Kong is that the Shanghai Hong Kong Banking Council is the one that buys gold and sell it to the other market. So China would buy from the SSBS, you know. But then also what China will do, because of the count of origin, that will be recorded as import from South Africa. Whereas we'll be recording that gold to Hong Kong, for example. It's an export to Hong Kong. So that's the main reason why it is this. But also I think there's a question around whether the deficit will come down, should be. I think partly it will. It will come down, because then if we are to record gold to China, then the number will change. But now we're not. We're not exporting gold to China. I mean, recording gold as export to China, which is a bit different. And then also, I mean, apart from the Shanghai Hong Kong Banking Council, gold is also sold through Frankfurt as well. So also, they will sell the gold to other markets as well. In fact, we're not only having problems with China on the gold issue. All the countries that are buying gold, they will record that gold as import from South Africa. Whereas we have recorded that gold as exports to Frankfurt, for example. So that is why, in terms of the the working group on statistics, we are about to try and address all those things to see. Okay, if both of us are to use, for example, CIF or FOB, how will this reflect? If gold were to be recorded directly to China, how will this? Yeah. So the main aim of the working groups that will provide a report at the end of the day that will clearly reflect all those causes of imbalances in the total trade between the two countries. I think that's where we are in terms of the issue around the trade deficit and statistics.
Thank you, Ambassador. Thank you, Chair. I will do my best to cover, because I think it's a lot of questions. Let me start with the political issues that Honorable Minister raised. Clearly, we work with China on the international forum. Political. I think as a developing country, there's the basic commonalities in approach. We have differences, it's true. Where we have differences, we have to raise them. And you have raised the question of human rights internally, but also this relates to the most recent question of the Dalai Lama, Tibet and all this. Now, we want to find an approach of managing this question without necessarily ruffling feathers, if you want to put it that way. Because sometimes an assumption is made that China doesn't want to listen. I think China will listen if you talk to them. I mean, we've got a very thorny issue, which the members of this committee will know. The question of this lady who's been sentenced in China to a death sentence, I mean, to death, because she was found with drugs. That sentence has not been carried out. She was on appeal, which was refused. It might coincide with your visit there, and it might create a lot of problems in terms of you managing that. And basically, we have raised the issue with the Chinese government to say, yes, she's responsible, she's committed a criminal offense. Yes, in Chinese law, this is a death sentence, but we plead as a government that in respect of our nationals, she can be spared and sentenced to life imprisonment. We have done that representation, both when the sentence was passed, but during the appeal, and we'll continue to plead the case. But I must say, it's been not an easy case, because when we talk to the victim herself, she's been pleading innocence throughout, that she's innocent, she's innocent. So it's been very difficult to sort of say, accept guilt, because things are found in your possession, bag is yours, and then we plead the case on the ground. So that's the thing. But I'm saying, we are dealing with these issues. They are difficult. Now, there's a recent example. You remember the French president went to China in March. I think so. Sarkozy. Now, Sarkozy, when they were chairing the EU presidency, took up very strong positions vis-a-vis China and the Dalai Lama and this and that. And unfortunately for Sarkozy, he went groveling to China, I mean, and was received with the coolness that the Chinese reserved for him, which came back really as a very terrible diplomatic blunder to sort of retreat and say, no, we have to find a way of dealing with China. Now he has to make an apology and say, our bigger interest is to keep good relations with China economically and this. So you have to avoid yourself putting yourself in a very difficult situation. I'm saying we have to raise these issues. I think Chinese, there's openings that they are making. We received in March here a vice minister for consular, and he was ready to engage with us. How do you deal with consular issues? How do you deal with your citizens? What, all these things. So I'm saying they are small open. Then let's pass to the question of labor relations. It's true. I think everybody knows that the labor relations issues are appalling. I mean, the salaries are very low. But obviously, as it impacts to our manufacturers, to our these things, we have to say, look, we're not happy that you can produce what we are producing at a very, very cheaply, because we have trade unions, we've got minimum wages. And so we discuss with them. I think critically, in all these things, the lesson that we have to learn, and we've got to say it consistently, we've got to say when it's painful to us. Sometimes we keep quiet, honorable members. I think we have to learn to say, no, it's so, it's painful here, like the textile question, when it shows. I mean, other trading partners of China, the ASEAN, they opened up a free trade zone with China. And as soon as it started in January, all manufacturers in that area, Malaysia and other areas in ASEAN, Indonesia, they were flooded by Chinese goods, and they all said, no, it's not going to work. You see, we're all being taken off, out of business. So, and they raised the issue and say, China must be given a quota which allows China to make a reasonable growth, whether 10% growth in their export, and allows other industries to survive. So these countries are discussing this issue strongly. You don't just let loose free for all, because you are not going to manage it. So I'm urging members that we should have that perspective, that we have to engage and engage and engage. So we have the issue of the Security Council. I mean, China, we nudge them. On the whole, China is not opposed to South Africa. Actually, recognizes South Africa as a growing power internationally in Africa, and we want to work with us. We have not taken opposing position. It's a question of Taiwan. We recognize one China policy, and we said, look, this is how South African government and people view this question, and that helped a lot, Chairman, to remove the suspicion that we are trying to do things. China places a lot of emphasis in today. They say they want to remove the impending suspicions. That's what the president, Hu Jintao, said when meeting our president in Brazil, that we have to deal with all these issues and remove any issues that raise suspicions in our relations. So it's an opening, and we've got to deal with all these questions. Economic diplomacy, yes, I think we do this. But we don't do it with sanctions. I raise the question of Burma. China doesn't work with sanctions. We have been talking about Burma, the junta in Burma, and China continues to trade. Now, if we have a strong issue, it's advisable that we also will not take actions that will make us to come back again saying sorry in another way. I think when we make strong statements, we have to make them, but I think when we check the impact of our sanctions on an issue, it might be difficult. I mean, we've got the question of for instance, critical question that relates to Iran, which we agree with, the question of nuclear armament of Iran. But in terms of sanctions, how would South Africa apply sanctions? We're importing oil from Iran. We can't support a policy that says, forget about oil from Iran. Just make a quick turnaround without taking account our huge dependence on Iranian oil. So this is the balance that we've got to strike when we want to make a very strong statement, which says in our constitution, and we've got cases here in Cape Town of the Chinese nationals, the ship that was hijacked and shipjacked, and the Chinese nationals involved, and people were killed. And the Chinese wanted this to be extradited to China, and we knew they were going to be killed. And we said, no, you can't do it. And we are responsible as a government. There's no way we'll concede to a request like that, knowing that these people stand a very good chance of being executed if they are returned home. So those are the issues. I'm saying we have got a difficult relationship to manage it without unnecessarily putting ourselves in a point where we're going to lose face and come back and and say sorry. You mentioned, Honorable Northern Cape, the question of foreign nationals. I think this issue we've got to visit it again in South Africa. I think I come from a small village from Eastern Cape also, so it's all happening there. And obviously all your shops have been bought up, and all your general dealers, which were white owned by the farmers there, they found quickly they sold off everything. Now, clearly that gives the economic food all of the Chinese manufacturers, and obviously the open up factories there. Your TVs and other things, all electrical supplies, they all go to those shops. And it becomes very difficult. Now, what has happened? The owner would have made a little bit of money, got out, But the economy, the village economy, is in tatters. I mean, you've got your small spaza shops. All of them are owned by Somalis and other people. I've got the case which is personal. My mother had a small spaza shop. It was closed down. You surrender. Everywhere, surrender. Because they come before. But what are we doing? I think the question, when you check, is that if the rules were applied, people must apply for a permit to open up a shop. But these things have not been done. Everybody must make an assessment. Can a community of this size support so many shops around the area? So I'm saying these are practical issues that we have let them loose, which are creating very, very uncomfortable situation among the population, making it very difficult for government to explain what are we doing as a country to protect South African nationals. So those are the issues that, Honourable, you can always revisit. Obviously, it's this now, but obviously issues of land will come in the future. I mean, there was a case which we always deal with, again, vis-à-vis the Chinese, now, the question of bringing in investment and bringing your nationals to come and do the job. It becomes a problem, because then you are not creating job opportunities. You are actually putting up infrastructure which you have to maintain, and the people are left unskilled. There was a case just nearby in Zambia where they are building, I don't know, a dam or something, a park. And then there was a proposal to bring in a million Chinese nationals to go and do that job. And most of them were not going to go back. So I do agree and accept that we've got to understand that there is a tendency of Chinese to move out of China. Some voluntarily for opportunity, but it's a very big growing trend. Now, how we deal with that? We used to joke and say, maybe the government said, get out of China to everybody. They are really moving fast. Every plane is coming down to Congo, to everywhere. So it becomes a big challenge. Part of the challenge, Chair, when you deal with Africa, you mentioned the Nepal and dealing with China, it's really that the weaknesses of African governments now are really a problem, because they can't deal with this. You've got a very weak state in Congo, which really takes money, takes anything that is put forward, irrespective of the longer term implications, and it creates a friction, because when you try and say this is strategic to your future and our future, but they said, we've got a sovereign right to make that decision. We need this money now. We need this. So it runs back to the issue of NEPAD, of how do you fulfill your NEPAD program. But on that point, I would want the committee something to invite the NEPAD commission, because it was a NEPAD secretary. It's here in Johannesburg. Because that's a very important instrument for us driving now the African specific economic agenda, the infrastructure and development, the investment. The NEPAD commission must be brought here, maybe with us, to come and again and engage on these issues that relate specifically to NEPAD. How are we going to go forward? We have the issue that has been raised, question of repatriating, I mean, the safety tips. I think China is slowly opening up, but China is not a democracy. So they take things. There's control. You've got to accept that. So I was passing through Shanghai Airport. I saw the immigration officials. They were changing the shift. They match. They match when they move from the check-in and another team coming in. So it's that type of a system. You fall in line. And in the terms of your communications, I think you can assume that they will listen to you. I mean, you've got your big questions of Microsoft, the Google, and this and this. So they use the capacities, capabilities to get more information from you. I mean, if you use their networks and things. So, I mean, you won't be arrested, but, I mean, you just have to follow your program, which is agreed, exchange before, and there'll be no problem. But obviously, they are very sensitive to issues. I mean, if you, not even intelligence-wise, but if you were to take, engage national talk about a democratic, I mean, hold press conference about democracy, how China is not democratic in China, you might not be very palatable to them. So you have to manage that. You might disagree with them, but you have to find a proper language. So they might want to curtail that type of freedom. Take different issues. I was saying the question of multinationals. This is challenging because the more Chinese companies, big ones, are coming here, the more it's good, but it's also a big challenge, even to our companies. So we are going to have to work. Part of the weaknesses of our system is this lack of coordination between government and business. This is really, really, again, an issue that cannot be papered over. We've got to find a way of how government works its business. Because if we don't find this common language, then things fall apart. I mean, what is the national interest? Then it is diluted because business might have a short-term interest which they want to do. I mean, we've got your issues of trade, but I mean, I was having a discussion with Japanese ambassador. Now, Japanese, they're the importers of more hair. And it's China and Japan. And that's a big thing. And I don't know who else is supplying more hair to those markets. But they were in PE, possibly. But how far have we planned and went ahead to say this is another area of growth? Let's work together. But sometimes we allow that it becomes the case of those businesses, that those farmers, that they must find their way, they've got the market. It's sort of a laissez-faire type of approach, which is not helpful. When we've got the food world, we must exploit it to the fullest. And it's growing, and it's going to grow that industry, and then begin to beneficiate it. The more hair, why should they just, we just see the more hair like that? We can actually do something about it. So I'm saying, sometimes we don't talk to each other. And then all the business, all the countries that come to do business, they know that. Sometimes that South Africans, we don't talk to each other. And then find a way of dividing us. We have a big problem of this colonial patterns that must not be replicated. It's a big challenge. It's really a big challenge. And China obviously would want to extract as much as they can. Even India would want to start, I mean, India's energy hungry. Also, they are the number fourth energy consumer in the world now. They have replaced Germany. So all of these countries want coal, want this now. And looking into the future, where are we going to be? You can sell land, you make a little bit of money. But if you are not doing this with a very, very thorough plan, we are setting ourselves for a big, big problem in the future. So we need to talk to them. We need to partner them. And I think, again, there are openings. It's a question of, sometimes we fall short of the strategy. I remember last year when we had a discussion, this is a partnership for growth. There was a discussion we had with the former Minister of Trade and Industry, Mpasa, yeah. And he said, we've discussed with China, there's a problem because we were given sectors and said you can export there. And we were told that our economy was overheating. We couldn't meet the demand. Yeah, this just happened. It's not a secret. It just happened that we were told, come in, there was a problem. We couldn't meet the demand, which talks to our need to reinvest here in South Africa for our capacity, which has been lacking. So hopefully with the EPAP, we'll be able to expand the economic players, expand the line of products we can export. So we can deal with China. I think the partnership with Standard Bank is a positive one. There are others. But again, let's talk to each other. We have to meet the business that are doing, or the companies that are doing business in China, SAP Miller and others, your MIH, and have a common strategy.
again as a country as to what do we see the way forward. And some of these answers, they would provide them for the country as a whole. And I think they can input also on the question of the strategic partnership agreement. I took a point, Honourable Member, about the committee being supplied all the relevant documents that relate to this. In the process, we'll quickly take you on board, give you enough time. We can be again invited to explain if there are issues to explain concerning that. I think made in China is another reality. I mean, we all know now that most of the companies, whether it's Boeing or other companies, they have relocated to China. Even BMW, the German manufacturers, they have relocated to China. So it can be German but made in China. No shoes. It's true. So this is the problem. So what to do? I think we need to leverage. I think the approach that government has taken to really say, let's expand the actors in the South African economy, it will allow us to develop our own capabilities and capacities. But also the advantage we have of being in China itself, I think it was a very big call when the Prime Media Group left to invest in China. Now they are one of the biggest media companies in China, your MIH and their new Shanghai Expo. But when they took that decision, it was early, very, very early, and nobody was clear, and others followed. But if we are going to be strong, we know that is area of growth now in the future. Your China, Southern China, Vietnam, and then Indonesia. We need to play stronger in those markets. And part of it is to be there, rather than hoping to export, because when you are trying to export, sometimes you hit all these other snags. But you have to be there and leverage your presence to get benefit to your country. The question, again, talking to what we're trying to do with China, you know, Honorable Members, we have a very difficult situation when it relates to our defense industries, which have, in a way, been disadvantaged. There's discussions going on around that area with Chinese defense industries. And I think the people dealing with that area, they think that there's a potential for South Africa to play stronger, and China can give an opportunity for some of those industries to again breathe the fresh energy or oxygen and make them to come back to profitability. So we've got to cultivate all these relations. So what I'm saying, all of them, is that we need a managed, coordinated approach. Like you go, you've got the right to meet the parliamentarians in China. And we had the Speaker of Parliament who came here. It was a very big thing of the Chinese, Chinese Assembly. This is Chinese of the Constitutional Committee. Now, it is true. I mean, they are coming out. They're taking a step forward. And they say, honestly, I'm like, look, we are developing. We are charting new grounds. It's a big country. We're experimenting in many ways, so we're not always confident as to what results are going to come out of any action. So you must understand that they've got some caution, but they are there to be engaged. My concluding note, Chair, you mentioned the BRIC. You mentioned the decision to engage this partnership with China. Now, sometimes things move slowly. The Shanghai Expo, as I said, became a very critical thing. But unfortunately, it coincided with the financial crisis. I think then there was a lot of waiting and seeing how far our resources can be overstretched, knowing that's a big investment. But finally, the go-ahead was done before the end of the financial year, and that's when really. But the meetings were taking place. There was some work that was being done. It's only the finances that were not there at that moment. That's what made it late. But when the funds were released, then we were able to put up that stand. The BRIC issue, that BRIC issue, we are also dealing with this issue. Now, the truth of the matter is that we are not members of BRIC. We want to be members of BRIC, but we're still not agreeing among ourselves again that this is the way to go. Some of it is based on the understanding that, you know, when the old analysis of economic relations, of trade relations, was developing countries have a weakness. They produce similar products, and they are also always competing against each other. So you are struggling to find commonalities that allow you to have a good relationship, because you don't have an import-export type of relationship. So when you characterize the BRICS countries, you said they are emerging markets. There's a case study about India and Brazil saying they are competing to actually access the European market, both of them. So what could they share? I say this is the old standard approach, but if you look the way BRICS is going, is to say, yes, there are those issues. You are not going to deny them. But can you look for commonalities that will allow the two developing countries, or three developing, or four developing countries, to move on certain areas? I mean, looking at BRIC on IPSA, in the science and technology, even on renewable energy field, there's a lot of potential to grow together. So rather than emphasize the negatives, look at where you can do the positives. So this is the time wrap sometimes what we find ourselves in, where people only emphasize those things. But the other point to that question is, if you are not there, what's going to happen to South Africa? Can we afford not to be there? The question of marginalization of South Africa, to me, is not a theoretical issue. So we cannot put this thing as if it's happening, it doesn't matter. Because everything that happens at BRIC, its final impact is going to be in Africa. We have a projected study done by the Standard Bank Group on BRIC trade with Africa. And they said in 20 years' time, that trade will be $4 trillion in 20 years' time. Now, I was saying 20 years, but there's a tendency now that has started. It doesn't mean that $4 trillion will arrive on year 2030. It's going to start now. Halfway through 2015, 2020, you are going to go close to 1.5 trillion, 2 trillion. The question, where will South Africa be when BRIC trade grows with Africa like that? There's also, to me, those are very, very critical issues. And sometimes we have our own internal discussions. We are also supposed to try and engage the committee, try and engage cabinet to begin to have a framework. Cabinet memorandum on these issues, because they are quite critical. So, honourable members, let me stop here, but you still need to pose questions. Did I skip something? Taiwan, no, that relationship is important. I think we downgraded our relationship with Taiwan. But we maintain interest. We know we've got economic, scientific, and other interests. But and China, we engage with them. They understood that position. But I mean, there's no need for us to get caught, because we explained ourselves. So we reached a common understanding of how to deal with each other. Thank you.
Yes, Honourable Funding.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think your question was missed. When will we be joining BRIC?
Okay, yes,
so we are right. Yeah. Now, around BRIC, do you remember when we were in Brazil? There was the Minister of Trade and Industry went to Rio de Janeiro. He met with BRIC. If I'm not mistaken, there was a lot of South African businessmen also present. what happened there and what agreements were signed, what doors were opened. Because I think as a committee, we need to know what happened there. And has any approval been given on those or agreements, or are they being worked on? What is happening there? Thank you.
Just before you come to that, I would like the two departments to come up with three issues each that would make the committee's work easier when they go to China. If you could say, you know, when you're going to China from DTI, it will be this, and the same thing with DICO. And I will leave, and then I'll come back then.
Chairman, thank you for because that was one of my questions originally, and neither department really gave me an answer. But the other one was the comprehensive agreement, and if it's going to be signed at the state visit, where are we with the agreement? Is it still coming to us, and so on? You didn't deal with that one, and then. Slightly new one, but following up on what the ambassador said about his mother's visa shop, also a personal thing, and it's not an international relations issue directly, but indirectly it is. The Angola, Eskom Angola pump storage scheme outside Ladysmith is now employing hundreds of Chinese labourers pushing wheelbarrows around, and I'm in the process of being interrogated by local people in Ladysmith as to why are we using Chinese labor on a project, an Eskom project, and I'm not getting to the bottom of it. I don't suppose it is really an international relations issue. It's probably home affairs rather than international relations. So your response can be, if you really want to, just say, go and speak to home affairs. Yeah.
You wanted to say something from, yeah?
Thank you. In fact, I just wanted to add some few points on a number of issues that were raised regarding the mineral beneficiation, adding value to our minerals. Why are we allowing multinational to take minerals without beneficiating? I think clearly, the PGD was really aiming to address those. One, at the presentation that was made there, one of the key elements of the PGD was the mineral beneficiation. And also it was envisaged that that the and that the mineral beneficiations will grant China access to our raw materials in return for investment in beneficiation. And then also, we were supposed to come up with projects, beneficiation projects, that we could be able to engage the Chinese on. We were working very closely with the Minerals Department, Department of Minerals and Energy. But the key challenge was that at that time, the beneficiation strategy was just drafted. Up until now, the beneficiation strategy has not been completed. So it was very difficult to come up with beneficiation projects. It's just unfortunately the DME or Minerals Department is not part of this. But the committee should know that at least there's a beneficiation strategy that is, has been drafted, has not been completed or signed off by cabinet at the moment. So until we get that right, we'll be able to address the mineral issues. Adding value to our minerals, not allowing companies to take minerals out of without beneficiating. And that's what the cabinet, I mean the committee, to know that. And then also in terms of the structure of trade issues and the argument that we've been making with China, is that China has been telling us that we should get our industry right. One, the IPAP 2 has just recently been launched. One, they're aware of it. They are willing to support the industrial policy. China has indicated that they are very willing to import value-added products from us, provided they're competitive. Now, competitive, that means low price, good quality. But as we know, it will be difficult to compete with China on that. They say, we are willing to buy those products, provided they are cheap, good quality. So we are faced with a very good challenge in this regard. So I just thought maybe the committee should note some of these things, particularly the beneficiation, the strategy that the EU is taking through the cabinet processes. I don't know how far are they with that, but the last time when we engaged them, they indicated to us that very soon it will go to cabinet, probably before June. So I'm not so sure how far is that process. But it's in terms of the broad strategy that the DME was taking the value chain approach, you know, where they've identified, you know, top 10 commodities that will be ready for the beneficiation. But it's all in the strategy, you know. So in terms of addressing those issues around minerals adding value, that is an answer, you know, to that, coupled with the industrial policy as well.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the three issues is support for our industrial policy priorities, the beneficiation, as Philip says. But I think the important one also is around the China-Africa Development Fund. Because initially when it was set up, it was supposed to encourage joint ventures between South African and Chinese companies in investing in various projects in South Africa, but also the continent. But we see that is not happening as we expected it to. So I think the importance of joint ventures, because that's how you will ensure there's transfer of skills, transfer of technology, and all of those issues. So as they go into the continent, there is a need to ensure that there is we promote the partnerships and the joint ventures. And then the CSPA, the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Agreement, DICO is leading the process. As far as I understand is that currently departments are making inputs into that Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Agreement. I'm not sure whether the ambassador has time frames as to when the committee can expect it, but that's where the process is now. It's at an input phase, and I'm sure as soon as those inputs are consolidated, then there will be an opportunity for a presentation into the committee. And with regards to any agreement signed during the BRICSA, there are no agreements per se that were signed, but I think it was a first meeting, business forum, to explore complementarities. Because as you indicated earlier, the approach to engaging with the South, as the ambassador also rightly pointed out, that we are developing countries and there's a lot of competition. But there are opportunities for identifying areas where we can complement each other. So it was about that, and there were presentations that were made by the various business stakeholders from the various countries to say this is where we're good at, so that they are able to look at opportunities of cooperation between business. But I think the issue is how do we take it forward now, since we have that platform, because though we're not we are in BRICSA, but there's that business forum that offers opportunities for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. No, let me just finish up with this BRICSA. He said there's an annual summit. We got to get our rows, our ducks in a row, so that when the next summit takes place, we will be formally in the BRICS format. So there was that meeting in Brasilia, which was cut short because of the disaster in China, the earthquake disaster. So that gave, I think, a little bit of time for us to do the work that we needed to do behind the scenes to make sure that South Africa's admittance is a formality. So we have another opportunity to do this. We're told that Russia is the difficult one on this matter. And the problem of Russia is really that Russia is trying to build an alliance that they can be in, which is
a powerful alliance which is seen to be opposite to the West, so to speak. So they have got that grand strategy. So they think that if you include small players like us, then you dilute the thing. So you, so we have to deal with the Russian issue more than anything else. So we're trying to do that. So, but the next summit, we'll have to work and be sure that we have to work. It will be 2011, the next big summit. The ESCOM thing, this is really, again, you are right, the work permit issue. But it also has an issue with us as Department of the International Relations, because we have to raise, I don't know, we have a bilateral commission, but it might be too late, it's in November, people are waiting now. So in the immediate term is to try and find how they were regularized, because we want skills. I think we have accepted that skills that South Africa doesn't have, those people must provide. But if it's pushing wheelbarrows, then it becomes problematic. Because the man sitting there wants that job to go and buy a bread, and you give it away. So, and at the level of the work permit issue, how it was done. And if we raise it to the companies concerned, I think you cannot, maybe, for starters, you can, a letter or something can be written. Then we all have to wake up and say, what has happened? And find out. Because sometimes, so nobody's looking as to what happened. You just see something and wonder, but we're supposed to investigate how did it happen. So in the process, honorable, I think even a letter will can allow us to say there's an issue, let's look at it and ask the parties concerned. I think there's nothing that stops us from doing that. But we'll raise it at the bilateral level. The three issues, honorable members, I think part of the thing that I'm trying to say with China, we need this dialogue with China at all levels. Even you as parliamentarians, we must find a way of having your dialogue so that you are able not to listen to or read newspaper reports, but open a channel of you when there's something having to do with Africa. Dialogue with what is your view of Africa's development. The same things we're talking about FOCAC, but you are also the overall, we are overseeing that type of relationship. And the Chinese parliamentarians must comment. Not only the executive, you can engage on that. And share your concern, our concern, about how we see the Africa development going forward. And then, that's the one. Second is the, obviously, China is strong on planning. We need you to look at their planning. How do they move a very rural area, Shanghai, in 20 years to the most developed city and region in 20 years. How do they do this thing? And there's a chance and opportunity to discuss with them, to understand, obviously, they are a very different system, but planning is planning. And we're doing the planning commission here, so it can help us to begin to input on our planning commission going forward. The third thing, I think, we need to understand what I've written here as educational farms. You know, Chinese have got now educational parks where they produce PhDs, doctors. So they're doing this because they know they're economy ministers. So it's not, and they actually, we visited this Huangwo. They actually grow enterprises in this educational farms. They were the software, sort of solid software corridor, but it's based on a very strong education. So ours is a bit scattered. I think it's one of the weaknesses that South Africa has. I mean, Malaysia has a very coordinated approach in the same issue of education and harnessing skills to go to a higher level of growth, which is intellectual-based economic growth. So we need these things, both at the higher level, obviously, we've got the other big challenges of our own skills development. How do you skill people? I think there are a few lessons here and there that can be. comprehensive strategic partnerships, I think we will have to come back to you. Next month, we will have a meeting that will give us all the inputs, and then at that point, we'll be able to immediately put to you a consolidated document of all the departments. If this is what the president will be, the government and ministers that come will be looking at when they are going to China in August. So our entry point will be next month. I think we've been preparing, so by next month, in the course of the World Cup, we will have to get a meeting that will give us the documents. Thank you.
Thanks very much. You know, at one stage I was engaging a professor in the University of KwaZulu-Natal about economics and international relations. He was academic. He said South Africa thinks locally and acts globally. And he even went further. He said, you know, I think you're explaining it now. He says, you know, China is one of the biggest countries. We might complain about this issue of deficit. But he says China even wants to buy things, you know, from us, which means the real things that make money. That they even said they'd open up a bank and put this money and wait for us to produce these things. So the onus is really with us. And the issue about the rural development and the example of Shanghai, it's far better that we'll pass through, we'll also visit that area. Also in Africa, you look at Malawi. Malawi had plantile even as a capital, but they made a political conscious decision and they developed Lilongwe. It's now a very big town, yes, in the rural areas. So I'm urging you members that you go to KwaZulu-Natal in a small town of King and Love, you make it far bigger than Pretoria.
Maybe you changed the IC and are now pushing a lobby. I just want to add that a lot of places
as the biggest province. Yeah, thanks very much. But thanks very much. I'm sure we've got the six most things. We'll add our own. I think the six are very relevant that we got when we go to China. And I'm sure the ambassador will accompany us going to China and everybody. But thanks very much for the presentation. And I think we have enjoyed it. What we'd like to see from the two departments, we'd like more engagement on these issues, because they are interrelated. In some cases, we might have to call you and request you, you know, to empower us on quite a number of issues. Mr. Hopa, thanks very much. You are always swift and fast in doing things. We just want to have to find out the way of multiplying you and getting some Hopas. Honourable members, thanks very much for your time. The meeting now stands adjourned.
Thank you, Thank you.
Yeah.